doing? Where you got 3 o'clock? What are you doing? He's going the wrong way. You know what it is? G. Bush had some. There's got to be some people over there that he had to say hi to first. Bold move out of him, but he's a man of the people. So I like that. I like that he'd be like, "Hey, JP, I can't do the radio thing right now. I got to make sure that some fans of G. Bush are taken care of."
Yeah, we know this about G. Bush.
That's what I'm thinking. That's the guess that I have.
Yeah, I don't see him. Lost total sight of him.
He went around the corner. He went where MJ Emerson went to.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe G. Bush is going to check on MJ Emerson. He's going to be like, "I'm going to get this firsthand. I'm going to go inside the medical tent. I'm going to figure out where this goes." I don't even know what is beyond there. I've never made my way beyond the section that G. Bush went to, but maybe he's got some hookup that we don't know
about. That's where all the fan festivities are.
He looked like I was like waving him over as if he didn't have the responsibility of being here at 3 o'clock.
No, not at all. Very bold move for him to turn the corner, go the other way, and then wave back at us and say, "Hey, I know I'm supposed to be on air right now, but I'm going to go over this way and take care of some business first."
Like it's 3:03. How fine. Call up Earl. Bring Earl over here. He can do a couple minutes. What a bold play by G. All right. We're going to get some of his reaction. Big news of the day. Right now, as MJ Emerson was left on a cart. And what's so fascinating to me about this, and what I'll think about for a while, we'll talk about the football ramifications of this. And if you want some time to call in, go ahead, feel free. We got some open lines for you guys. 216-474-0092 is how you get a hold of us. But we got text from Keith, our boss, during that Quick Hit segment, and it was of the Mike Garofolo tweets. What's interesting, though, is that the tweet, I don't know, I wasn't checking my phone. I genuinely just looked over to the side at the exact moment that MJ Emerson was then leaving in a cart and going over, but I couldn't tell it was MJ Emerson. I could just tell because the jersey wasn't on and he had a towel over his face, so I could just tell that it was a player and something wasn't right, but I couldn't see his face because he had the towel over it. And now that obviously we then got the text and everything like that and the tweets, and apparently he was down for a substantial amount of time. And so after his injury, Daniel Oyafusi tweeted out that the Browns finished the 7-on-7 with Dylan Gabriel and Sanders getting a set of plays, and now they're into a game-winning drive situation. And then Flacco led the first team unit into field goal range, so did Gabriel, and we're kind of moving on from there. But it was a very emotional scene here, and it's kind of taken over the entire practice as people have put together the idea that not only was MJ Emerson down, but MJ Emerson was down for a while, and this does not look good when you are this amount of days into training camp and we're starting to have some injuries pile up. But this is, in my opinion, this is what happens when you decide you don't want to have Cap Cupcake anymore. Like when you don't want to have an easy going camp. And listen, I don't judge Stefanski for taking this approach because he had a soft camp last year. They ended up with the fourth most amount of injuries in the entire NFL anyway. So the injuries part got to him as it was anyway. But he ended up with a soft camp, didn't seem like they were prepared, didn't seem like they were ready, and he had to do something a little bit different. Now, again, we'll find out if this was a non-contact injury or if this was him getting banged up as we got pads out on these guys. We'll find out more information as we go. But this almost feels like this is just the cost of doing business sometimes. If you're going to run a tougher camp, if you're not going to be Camp Cupcake, then this is sometimes the result of that. And this is what Stefanski is going to have to judge and try to balance out. Past couple seasons, he clearly thought to himself, "I need to make sure that these guys are healthy for week one. That is the most important thing. Get them healthy, get them there." Well, you notice this offseason, after having the fourth most amount of injuries in the entire NFL this last year, you notice what they did. They fired Joe Sheehan. They fired nearly 10 different people on their training staff. Like, they wanted to do things a little bit differently. They wanted to treat training camp a little bit differently. Like, the early report from everyone that's been here over the past couple days, this is no longer just an easy camp. Well, sometimes that result is what happened with MJ Emerson. All right, let's bring our buddy G. Bush into the equation. G, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man?
I can't hear you yet, but we'll get there. I'm trying to figure out where you went.
We went around.
You went around?
Yeah. Well,
okay, hold on. We're gonna get you lined up. You just wait right there. We'll get you lined up, and then we'll get your reaction off of MJ Emerson and everything associated with the MJ Emerson injury. Because I don't know if you saw as you were going around there, MJ Emerson did leave on a cart, and so we got to discuss all that. So wait, did you have some fans of the show? What was going on?
Maybe I need to switch this one.
Do you need to switch helmets? I called it a helmet. It's a mic.
Right.
What's funny about that, though, is that I think you're right. I think you needed to switch that one. Yeah, there we go. You good?
Let me do this.
All right, we're just going to have G. Bush just hang on the corner for a little bit, and then we'll get this squared away. I'm sorry. I apologize to you for being like, you're going to be in the corner now, but the show must go on, and then we'll get your MJ Emerson reaction as soon as we possibly can. But like, this is part of the deal. When you don't have a camp that's easy, you're going to end up with some sense of, are we doing this the right way? Or are we not doing this the right way? You can just speak at any point. If I hear you, I hear you. So the problem here is that with MJ Emerson now being out, and we don't know how long he's going to be out for, maybe this is a Justin Fields situation where he was back playing in 24 hours. You know, maybe it's a Justin Fields situation where all of a sudden everything's okay and everyone made a big deal about it when it really wasn't that big of a deal. But you're starting to see parts of this defense. JOK obviously not there and is not coming back. It's not happening. And now you have MJ Emerson, who I legitimately feel like is a really, really good corner when he's not playing through injuries like he did last season. I'll maintain it for as long as I need to maintain it. I was convinced that he was playing through injuries. He was playing through something that maybe wasn't the greatest for him, and that's why we saw MJ Emerson suffer. So it's early. It's early. But you can't have so many different injuries pop up and then evaluate and think to yourself everything's all right. Like, even the Kenny Pickett injury. Now, Kenny Pickett was running down the field trying to celebrate an 80-yard touchdown. That wasn't because this was an easier camp or a harder camp relative to years past. That's not what that was.
Yeah.
There you are.
Yeah, there I got you. There I go. Here
all
I
right,
go.
All right, G. All right, so first off, what were you doing over there? Were you saying hi to, like, YouTube friends or what?
Listen, you know, when I heard somebody say, G. Bush.
Yeah.
But it happened to be more than one. So one of those people were you.
Yeah, I'm over here. I'm like flagging you down. I'm like, hey, it's 3:02. You're supposed to be here at 3.
You're looking around.
You want to do the show? Or
I was looking around. They called me. I was like, yeah. I was in my car when you was talking about the MJ Emerson. And I was like, hold on. What happened? But I forgot. I'm like, hold on. But, yeah, I probably should go, like, be on the radio because they're talking about MJ Emerson.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that thing. So that is wild. So people were calling me.
People were calling you. Okay.
And I looked around. I said, hold on. This is a hospitality tent. This ain't. There's no microphones back here. There's a whole bunch of people.
Okay, you just went to the wrong tent.
The wrong tent.
I thought we made eye contact.
Listen, it looks
what
like
happened?
That. It looks like that with the shades. I got they shade, right? And then and I'm looking like, hold on, who said that? Like, and when I take these off, I tell you, I'm starting
to get. You looked me dead in my eye.
I was looking at you. He was like, bro, he came out to the, he said, I'm at the corner, man. Yeah. I'm at the corner. So.
You're at the corner. So you went to the other corner.
I'm like, okay.
Okay.
But listen, that hurts.
So let's talk about MJ Emerson. Woo! So MJ Emerson, the cart came rolling on over here. He had the towel over his face. Mike Garofolo is reporting that it's some sort of knee injury. We don't know how substantial the knee injury is yet, but it's some sort of knee injury. So it's obviously not great for anyone involved. The other update on that was there was no weight on his left leg as he was helped with the cart.
Listen, so here's where I knew it was all bad.
Yeah.
When you said his fellow compadres, his DBOG brothers, his brethren, was coming out to you, giving him that pound, listen, I done been on a bunch of carts. I done tore all my, you know, a lot of, and we're not going to speculate and say that's what it is. I want to put that out there in the community. But anytime that you cannot put weight on your leg and you have a towel and you're visibly shaken and you're visibly frustrated and upset, MJ Emerson, he had a new number change, contract year. I heard what you said. I definitely agree. I thought MJ Emerson played a little injured last year, including David Njoku.
It's the only thing that makes sense. I thought a lot of those guys were doing that, but I thought MJ Emerson in particular was the one I highlighted. He was too good 2 years ago.
Right.
And then was so good. You know the other spot that he was good in? Was obviously it was training camp last year. I remember talking to Matthew Collar, who covers the Vikings, and he's been around the NFL for a million years. He knows a lot of these guys. But it was interesting. I remember talking to him. He's the one that actually told us for the first time that the Browns' offense was just absolute doo-doo and was just awful.
And we kind of glazed over that.
It was a massive story, though. No, right. it was a massive story because we're like, wait a second. Who is this guy to say that our offense stinks? He's like, listen, I've been around the NFL for 20 years. This offense stinks, okay? This isn't good. But I remember talking to Matthew last year, and Matthew was like, who's MJ Emerson? And I go, all right, fair. I get it. You cover the Vikings. You're not going to know every player on the Browns. Little surprising you don't know who MJ Emerson is, but I'm not expecting you to know all 53 players on all 32 teams. That's ridiculous, right? I go, MJ Emerson was really, really good last year. I think he's going to be one of the best corners in the league this upcoming season. Pay attention to him. He goes, MJ Emerson was the only one that had a chance against Justin Jefferson. And he was killing it.
Hey, when that came down, I thought MJ Emerson was on track to having an all-pro season and having his name mentioned as, hey, the Cleveland Browns might got two of the best corners, three of the best corners in the league.
Right.
And he, you know, they talked about how Justin Jefferson gave him his peas.
He gave him his flowers. That's right, he did.
And said, hey, man, he's one of the best. So it's tough to see that happen. And by the way, they're pulling it up right now. Usually they're not pulling it up like that. There's a discussion going on.
I'm telling you, there's a different vibe since that injury.
Yeah.
Like something is like maybe they're realizing that we went a little bit too hard in the paint here.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to dial this one back because we can't be losing MJ Emerson's every single day of camp.
So now you take a look at it, and we talked about the situation with Kenny Pickett. And by the way, I was out there today that Kenny Pickett, you know, had the hamstring. I thought he had his best day. I thought he moved the pocket. He was using his legs a lot. He had a couple touchdowns on the goal line. And so I'm like, oh, Kenny is playing well. And then they ask the next day, the news comes out, and they say, well, he had the MRI, and we're not going to really speak on that. Anytime you got the MRI, that's not a thing. They don't just do that just to do it and waste money.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, trust me, try to have an MRI done without your insurance company knowing. That's the quickest phone call you'll ever get. Whoa, who said anything about the MRI? You've got to go CAT scan, X-ray.
They're trying to put you in the machine. Yeah, and you're right. No, this isn't covered.
We're not doing this.
Then
you figure out the hard way till you get that bill. But the MJ Emerson thing is tough because if the Cleveland Browns are going to overachieve or have more wins than we think they will.
Yeah,
it has to come through the defense.
Well, and you needed guys like MJ who were convinced. And again, there's a reason why I brought up the training camp story with Matthew for a reason. It's because it's not like he entered last season and then was just cooked the entire year.
Yeah,
like he was showing a lot of promise, showing a lot of growth, and then it just kind of went downhill. And that would tell me that he was dealing with some injuries. That would tell me that he was playing through some things, but. How many guys in the defensive side of the ball can I make that excuse for? Was it because the offense was so bad that it was putting some of these guys in just an awful situation and they were just having to play and try to pick up for the offense and they were probably gassed a little bit more? Or was there more situations like MJ Emerson where I just think he was injured?
Man, so it's one of them things where I've been on fields where you feel like there's no – on defense, it's a different thing. Defense is all about – attitude, personality, want to, dog, fight, all that good stuff. But you'll be surprised how much of that gets taken out of your soul when you realize, oh, we can't score no points.
Mm, yeah.
Listen.
You can pitch almost a perfect game and you still might not win.
It don't matter. Like, when you're seeing those checkdowns go down and you're not having the explosive plays and you realize that you're deficient, that puts a lot of stuff on players where either now you start to either, A, kind of dog it a little bit, and not give as much effort. And I think that's what happened to Juan Thornhill. I think that's one of the things that got him. He was – when you're used to playing at a high football level in other places.
Yeah, he was playing for Super Bowls.
And he playing for Super Bowls. So that wanes a little bit. But the second thing that happens is you see people start making business decisions. Hey, like, I'm going to be – I need to be out here, and I need to make more plays. And you start doing – busting assignments and doing things and going rogue. So – it's never good. Hopefully MJ Emerson, we get a report and hope he's better.
216-474 to below 92. Will the MJ Emerson injury impact the Browns and in what way? He went down. He left in the cart. We don't know the severity of it, but we're trying to figure out whether or not this will alter training camps moving forward because Stefanski took a different approach this season. I wonder if he goes back to the approach he had last year after this. 216-474-0092. G. Bush, Jonathan Pino, an afternoon drive right here on the Fan. MJ Emerson had an injury today. We'll talk about how that relates to the Browns in a second. Dylan Gabriel doing his best Forrest Gump impression in front of us. Hey. I was running. He is just running full out sprints right now.
Hey, listen, he's getting like, I mean, it's goal line to goal line, bro.
What is happening? Like, it's a million degrees out. He's just running full on sprints.
Well,
I just
see Daryl said that he threw a pick.
He got picked. So he got picked in the red zone to end his 2-minute drill. And I guess maybe he's punishing himself.
Oh, yeah, that's what's happening.
Is that what it is?
Shame.
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 It's his version of a shame bush. He's got to do some sprints instead.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not Game of Thrones shame. But, yeah. You know.
Well, nothing's really Game of Thrones shit.
I mean, he's moving. Listen, I saw Patrick Mahomes doing that.
He's running.
Yeah.
Like you saw Mahomes do this, too?
Like in the quarterback little documentary?
Oh, yeah.
He was running and weaving and doing things like that.
That's because radio hosts called him fat is why that was. He was like, I just need to do some extra conditioning.
He's like, I'm going to work my way. He's the only quarterback now, I know works his way into shape during the season.
Can I say this about Dylan Gabriel?
Go ahead.
Low-key fast.
No, listen, hold on.
I didn't know he was this fast.
Hold on. So let me throw this. I was out here on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing I said was, hey, man. I turned to Jason Lloyd. I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, hey, listen. Hey, man, Dylan Gabriel got a little arm on him, huh?
Well, so he's always had the velocity. Like because he threw it like 70 miles per hour at the combine. Like we knew he could throw it. I think that's a good point though. I think it's interesting when you see it in person. It definitely is. It fires off a little bit.
Yeah,
quicker.
It hit a little different. Yeah. Like you know what I'm saying. When you see it, that's why I be trying.
But that's the thing with Dylan Gabriel though. It's never been about whether or not he could actually play the game. It's whether or not he could play the game being a munchkin. The thing with Dylan was could he play the game at 5'8"? In college all he did was make passes.
Yeah,
all he's done is make completions. I've never had a problem with his actual game. Again, every level he's ever been at, he's performed to a high degree. Yeah. I just have a problem with the fact that I don't know that he can see over the offensive line.
I think my assessment was that when he's throwing like throwing outs and slants with clean pockets and a little bit of real estate in front of him,
yeah,
he's highly accurate. He has velocity on the ball. Looks good. The issue is in confined spaces with a rush in his face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
He now has to find those windows, and it don't really help that much if your left tackle standing right in front of you is 6'8". So now you definitely got to find a couple extra windows, especially if the pressure is there. So, you know, that's the thing that will be the key for him to figure out what he's going to do. But that's one thing about coming to practice. You ask me, man, you just come to practice? And I say, yeah, because.
Yeah, well, I mean, because I've known you for a million years, and I've never known you just to come to practice, but now you're here every day.
Yeah, I just was like, well, here's the thing, too. When you see it, because I'm like you, I heard you on the way in. I'm along the lines of I'm an individual that I would like to have a lottery ticket. I want to see which one of these quarterbacks can possibly be something,
mm-hmm.
because I know that the greatest stimulus package in the world is actually having first round picks that you don't have to spend on quarterbacks.
Exactly. You can spend it on skill position players. Yeah. You get whatever your heart desires.
It's like going to the grocery store and not being hungry.
And imagine having the quarterback situation figured out, and then you got two of those to spend next year.
Man, so I said, let me come down here and look. I got to see for myself. At the time, you know, Shador wasn't getting any first team reps.
Well, we're going to get in a lot of Shador in the 4 o'clock hour as well. So don't worry. We're going to have a lot of room for Shador.
So, but I will say, so I had to come down and take a look at it. And I was saying on UCSS earlier today.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you could have, we heard Jimmy Haslam speak. You can have all the plans in the world. But when you get out here and practice and life starts happening.
What's your of mice and men quote?
The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
There we go.
Now, look, man, you got the best plans in the world. But when you get here and people start moving around and large human beings start tackling people, people seem to start dropping a little bit. So.
Well, and so that's the interesting thing here, G. Like, so Kenny Pickett got injured, and again, he was running 80 yards, kind of like doing what Dylan Gabriel was doing right there. Mm-hmm. But he was basically just celebrating. That's not, like, I can't put that on a hard practice or this one not being Camp Cupcake or anything like that. But then you have the MJ Emerson injury, and we're 2 weeks into this thing, and you have what was potentially your day one starting quarterback, and then your second best corner on the team that was supposed to have a big bounce back season, and all of a sudden, players are dropping like flies. So I do wonder if this will change what the Browns do moving forward, because they've gotten a lot of praise. And I don't know, I haven't been in every practice. It's the first practice I've been at. But, like, have you seen on Saturday and then on Monday and really last Friday, did you see it being much different than what it was last year? Because last year was a joke, in my opinion. Like, I watched those practices. I was out here doing shows. Last year was an absolute joke when it came to toughness and physicality. But did they course correct a little bit too much?
I went down and I went – the first thing I wanted to see was I want to go down – and I got here, and I watched the offensive line. And the offensive line was doing pre-practice. Now, pre-practice, for those that don't know, is, practice starts at, say, 2.
Mm-hmm.
But we all know that 1:30 we're out there getting that pre-work in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you can get a lot of extra work. And they were out there drilling power steps, zone steps, gap schemes. I'm saying, wow, I haven't seen this. Guys are talking, really, really working on hand placement. And I knew it was different then because last year it was based on, hey, let's get everybody to the finish line. Let's get everybody ready to go so we don't gotta. You know, we want to get everybody whole by the first game. And then they realized that by the time they got to the Dallas Cowboys game, they said, oh, this is the second week of training camp for these guys when we playing real games.
Yeah, and they got just absolutely destroyed by what turned out to be a pretty bad Cowboys team.
Bad. So that's how bad it was. When you get smoked by them and then they come out and look bad, it just goes to show you the difference in mentality.
It almost felt like last year. And we saw this in a couple of different spots across the NFL. But it kind of felt like last year they were just like, well, everyone's in agreement. We'll take the first 4 weeks kind of easy. And we'll just kind of like ease our way into the season. And we'll just kind of, it's 17 games now, not 16. So we got to take it a little bit differently. And the Browns just didn't get the memo that not every team was doing that, you know? And a team like the Cowboys came out and just punched them in the face. And it's different this offseason. Have you noticed that? Like the Bengals, Browns play the Bengals week one. What has been the messaging out of Cincinnati in that camp? It has been, we are going to play harder, we're going to play more physical, and we're going to have a tough camp. We're going to do things differently so that week one, we look better. Now, I'd argue in years past, they look bad because Zach Taylor decided that running the ball was the best option when Joe Burrow's his quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. They're taking these things just a little bit different, and that's why I find it so interesting. Like, after seeing the MJ Emerson injury today, do they then go back to the other direction and go back to what it was last year, or do they maintain, pedal to the metal, let's keep this thing hard, let's keep these practices hard?
I think they stay with the hard practices. Go back, you know, Instagram as I'm watching, there's a nice little soundbite of Kevin Stefanski when they pull it up. He says, listen, guys, it was hot out here today. It's going to be hot out here tomorrow. There's only one way to get your body ready, and that's to train hard and to practice hard. So, you know, there will be casualties. that's part of, you know, you're going to get some friendly fire. You're going to get some casualties. But here's the thing. If he wants to go back to what he was and the identity, see, sometimes you got to break it down. What was your identity? People are saying, hey, you know, we want to go back to that old school Kevin Stefanski. And I'm like, well, do you remember what that was? That was play action, boots, screens, and prime Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt running downhill. I don't see Kareem Hunt. I don't see Nick Chubb. Quinshon Judkins is not signed. Nick Chubb is playing for the Houston Texans. So my thing
is – apparently looks pretty bad too, by the way.
Who was that?
Nick Chubb.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Listen, I didn't hear you.
I still have friends in Houston, and I've talked to a couple of them, and they said, like, the ones that are there at the camp every day, and they made the suggestion that Nick Chubb doesn't look like he – it looks like a very bad signing at this point.
Oh, okay.
Like, it looks awful.
We'll see.
We know why the Browns didn't re-sign him now.
Well, Joe Mixon is out, I believe, until the preseason starts. So we'll see how many carries Nick Chubb gets. But here's the thing. I think a lot of people were willing to say, okay, well, if Nick Chubb is not going to be your third, if he's not going to be in the mix and you drafted two running backs, okay, we get it. But one of them running backs, we don't even know going to play. So what are we going to hang our hat on in terms of the running game? It's still Jerome Ford. It's still Pierre Strong. And Dylan Sampson. Like, so, you know, be careful what you ask for. But to get the offensive line ready to go in order to run that play style, they got to give them reps. They got to do it. So we'll see how it works.
All right, 216-474-0092, at GBush91, at JPNO is how you find us on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends at Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Coach Riz joining us in about a half hour or so. We'll get back to the Brownies at that point. Big Shador Sanders 420, 440 segment as well. We'll get a lot of those type of conversations, and it really just kind of get us ramped up. I feel like both me and you and Spencer, who's sitting right here as well, we all feel very fondly of Shador. We're like the three Shador people on the station. We can throw Earl in the mix as well.
The coalition.
And so we'll have a heavy, let's just love on Shador 420, 440 type segment. But I think there's some truth and some conversations that we have to have around Shador. So we'll do that in the 4 o'clock hour. But I want to talk with you guys about what's going on with Emmanuel Clase, because I didn't get a chance to do any of this yesterday. I just got back from Boston, and so Nick was in yesterday with Chris, with Fedor, and so now this is my first crack at it. But we've seen more and more parts of the story as well. Ken Rosenthal tweeting out last night about what this could mean for the deadline. We'll get to that side of things. But it's interesting. Last time me and you hosted together, It was the day that Ortiz got cracked, yep. and we went through that whole entire saga, down to the amount of states. There was three different states that bets were placed, and it was interesting because I remember kind of laying down the foundation for it and explaining just how stupid it is that any player would be guilty of such a thing. Mm-hmm. Because, listen, I got a buddy of mine who always says, I don't go gambling, I go winning, okay? And so, like, so I got to do this. I got to do this in two different spades here, right? This isn't gambling the way that people are talking about it being gambling. It's a problem I have with the whole entire discussion okay. to begin with. So we'll unpack this as we go okay. here, okay? This is closer to I don't go gambling, I go winning. This isn't a bet as to whether or not they will win the outcome. When Pete Rose was betting in the 70s, okay, he still had to wonder to himself, I'm only one guy. I can only manipulate the game so much. I might end up on the losing end of this. When Ohtani's interpreter was losing millions of dollars, it's not because he was going winning, it's because he was going gambling and being awful at it. The difference here between what Ortiz is accused of and what Class A is accused of, that's not gambling. That's them winning. That's them pocketing money, and that's them figuring out the outcomes. Now, Guardians may have known something was coming. They're not idiots. Vogt said in the piece that he didn't know exactly what was coming, but they weren't born yesterday, okay? They just weren't. The reality is they thought to themselves, he might be under investigation for this. We're still going to put him out on the field because we know he's impacting the game in such a little minuscule way, and we're still getting the outcomes that we want out of him. Like, at this point, yeah, you can label it gambling, but this isn't gambling to me. This is a way of just pocketing extra money, even though the infractions are just as serious as gambling, and the MLB has to treat it just as serious as gambling. When you do one-pitch bets for $40,000, $30,000, like, gee, you're not gambling on the outcome of the game.
That's free money.
That's just free money. You're cashing. You're not losing that bet.
I'll be fascinated to see when they really break it down, because you know they got a situation where they're like, okay, we can't come out with nothing. We ain't going to say nothing. But I want to know what tipped it off. Like, obviously, if you're betting pitch to pitch, like
– Well, so it's got to be the large sums of money that were placed on it. That was the tip-off. So, like, in the Ortiz instance, we never found out what the amount was, but reasonable minds would suggest that if it was a $10,000 bet on one pitch to start off an inning, that's going to raise a red flag. Like, you don't need a system to tell you something's wrong here. Anyone that's been in Vegas for any amount of time will tell you something's not right here.
And you know, the crazy part about it is I always tell people like this, man. Try to go wire to over $10,000. Flagged.
Right?
Go to an airport and have $10,000 cash. Flagged.
Can't do it.
You can't do it. Like, so for you to believe that they're not watching this, and this is digital, there's a digital footprint on everything you're doing. And it's very easy to go back. And the crazy part about it is when they're doing investigations and they come get your hard drives or they come get them cell phones, it's like, okay, at that point, they're watching you. And let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We can't prove it, but do you think the two actions are connected?
Yeah, I don't know how it couldn't be. Like Ortiz or Clausette, we don't know which one would have been the starter here, but there's no way that the two of them are just lone wolves on this.
Right. Like,
there's got to be, and I'm doing a lot of guesstimating. Whether or not we'll ever have it proven or not is another thing, and you can just take the Hector Gomez tweets and just shove it up where the sun doesn't shine. I don't care about him. Mm-hmm. But, like, just think about the idea that Ortiz would look at this as free money, Class A would look at it as free money, and that everybody else in the room would just say no. Like, it starts and stops at two people. I just don't buy it. Not if they actually thought they had some sort of syndicate and some sort of way of actually doing this. It's just whether or not baseball can prove it is what I'm trying to get to.
And here's the thing. I don't think that maybe they didn't think about it, even if obviously they're not dumb enough to go up and say, here, I'm going to put it where it was easily traceable back to me. But it's still easily traceable back to, like, whoever it is, right? Like, if you are in specific cities and they can see a pattern of, hey, these guys are betting $10,000, $20,000 on one pitch, let's go and see
You know who those guys are. So, like, for instance, I have a buddy of mine, and I was on his bachelor party. He was in my wedding. He's a good friend of mine, right? Mm-hmm. And he works at one of the gambling companies, okay? And so I'm at his bachelor party. We're in Vegas all together. And one of the guys that was on this Vegas trip with him, a buddy of his, was just one of the guys that ends up, he's a client of his. And they just ended up becoming buddies. But the client of his is there for a reason. It's because he bets massive amount of dollars. He's very, very wealthy, very well off. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to this guy. And we're just eating. We're eating steak, just having a dinner and everything like that. And the guy is telling me how he's betting $10,000 on spring training baseball games. Like, spring training baseball was going on. And he's betting $10,000 a game. And he's moving the lines on spring training. But it's like, well, who's he hanging out with in this setting? He's right. Hanging out with the guy that is his connection to the gambling app that he uses. Not only did they know each other, they became good friends. That's how well they know each other, because, like, this is how this works. If you're in that space and you're gambling that amount of money, the casinos know who you are. Yeah. The gambling companies know who you they know who you are. They know everything about you. So if you randomly pop up and through three different states you're betting on Guardians first pitches, it's going to signal some alarms. Like, people are going to be like, where did this come from? Who is this guy? And what do we know about him? And luckily for at least baseball didn't just sleep on some of the warning signs. How obvious the warning signs were is what I'm interested in, though. 216-474-0092. I have one theory that connects Ortiz and Clase together that nobody's thought of. I got one. I'll tell that to you guys in 5 minutes. We'll get to Coach Riz coming up in about 20 minutes as well. It's Jonathan Pedel and Garrett Bush, Afternoon Drive in Berea, right here on The Fan. I don't mean to do this. I just, every single break, I've had some film, some highlight just up on my computer, because it's where Twitter just stops scrolling for me. And every time we come back, it's G. Bush just like, hey, what's going on there?
What's up? That's a nice, where you get this film
what's
from?
What's happening on that? It's like it's all brand new for you.
I'm a film junkie. I was just watching, like, Bernie Kosar in, like, 89, man. Like, on randomly, and like watching whole old Browns games on YouTube.
Yeah, you want to tell Bernie your thoughts on Bernie's throwing style in the 80s?
Oh, listen, I watched a whole documentary on him. Like, Sabo and NFL films. Like,
I know, but it's funny when you watch Bernie. Bernie's not getting drafted with that technique today.
Oh, no, listen. Hold on.
I don't want to be that guy.
No, hold on.
I've gone back and watched a lot of Bernie tape. And like, oh,
this is throwback stuff.
See, I mean, he got the job done, but Bernie's not. Bernie would get lit up by some of these coaching, these quarterback coaches.
Back then, like, so think about it. How would you even get into a position of drafting Bernie? Because
everything's a shot put.
Everything is analytics now. So back then, people was just waking up being like, I'm going to go by my gut.
That's really how it was.
I'm going to go by my gut.
We call that the old John Dorsey.
The old John. Listen.
It's like, what does my gut tell me? Okay, let's do that. And then John Dorsey, one of the best drafters of football players in the past 10, 15 years. Maybe he had something going.
He had something working for him. I think his draft classes have aged
There really
well.
Was something to the idea, though. It's like, I just know football players.
Yeah,
I see a football player, I know this.
And think about it. The things they let Bernie do. Why? Think about this.
Yeah.
The man called his own plays.
Yeah, it's wild.
What are you talking about?
It's truly
wild. What do you mean you called your own plays? Like, he's like, yeah. I said, so hold on. Every time I see him, he's like, dude, G. Bush, I know I done had a lot of concussions and stuff, and I forget a lot of stuff. But every time we talk about this, you are baffled, and you ask me that. I'm like, because Bernie, I don't understand, bro. What do you mean you're calling your own plays, my guy?
You have, like, a go-to Bernie conversation.
Yeah,
every
and
time
I'm like,
you see
so, I say, so
and Bernie at some point was like, you've done this conversation.
We've done this
10 times,
and I just skip right over it. Just leap right over that. Like, yeah, I know. But anyway, back to this run pass mix. How was you deciding?
That's a funny
story. Like, how was you? This was crazy, and so Bernie literally. I didn't spend a lot of time just picking his brain. This dude literally came when Troy Aikman gets injured. Bernie Kosar goes to Dallas.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and he don't know the playbook. He don't know nothing. He gets there and wins to get these guys into the NFC Championship in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He's an encyclopedia when it comes to, like, the way he understands the game. His brain is so crazy in the way he thinks.
But he also
about
probably took it to just the simplest thing possible, too, which is it would blow people's minds today. But he probably was like, hey, I'm going to see a guy open. I'm going to throw it to the guy that's open.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You don't have to make this too hard sometimes.
Yeah, hey Bill, I know you want to – I know you don't like this, but Bill, I saw a play. I audibled. I threw a touchdown. And yeah. Bill was like, get up out of here. under no choices will we be doing this. So,
well, and so that's what's different today in many ways is that, so like, the line is like, the operation was a success, but the patient died.
Right.
And it's like, well, you can have these type of things where it's like Shador Sanders can make a completion, but then because Shador didn't go through the right progressions and then also didn't go to the completion of the right spot, then people are like, oh, well, that was a fail. That was a failure. It didn't work. Well, no, he still completed the pass. It's at some point we do have to kind of just accept it for what it is.
Well, here's the thing about franchise quarterbacks, right? And here's the thing about
they want you to do the test and show your work is the difference.
Yes.
Before it used to be, how did we get? Don't care how you got the answer, just give me the answer, and you got 100% of the test. Now it's that fourth grade teacher of yours that it's like, well, you had the right answer, but you didn't show on the test, you didn't show on the paper how you got to the right answer. So I'm gonna assume you cheated off the guy next to you, and you don't really know what you're doing.
If they made us do that right now, and I wouldn't pass college.
Oh yeah,
they make you turn the scrap paper in now too with the test. They're like, yeah, where's your work at?
I'm the,
like,
the what? Scrap paper too?
They scrap paper. I was like, all I need is a syllabus and a TI 86, and I'm good. I'll figure the rest out. We'll get it done. Now they send you in there with a regular calculator,
and then you find out how to put the cheat codes on the TI-86.
Oh, what do you mean, bro?
That was the game inside the game, was finding different ways to just cheat in very, very little ways that didn't actually impact anything.
Bro, listen, they had a whole.
You spend more time trying to cheat than you did actually study. You could have just studied.
I just should have just went to class.
Yeah, yeah.
You should have just pulled up.
Yeah.
But as a franchise quarterback, right? Yeah, they could tell you what you're looking for and how to see it. But the true greatness of a franchise quarterback, and you know it when you know it, is on game days, he's just different. That backside dig is never supposed to be open.
Mm-hmm.
And he told you that's – I saw the backside dig, and I looked off to safety, and I threw a no-look behind-the-back pass.
Yeah, and you made it work.
And it worked. So now give me $100,000 million.
All right, Coach Riz is joining us in about what was that number?
$100,000 million.
All right, Coach Riz joining us in 10 minutes. So I told you, before the break, though, I told you I had one theory on Class A and Ortiz and how they're connected in this whole entire ordeal. And I want to – you're the perfect person to throw this by.
Because
you'll entertain it, and you'll take it to a way that
I got to step my game up. If Andy Roth is always looking, he used to always show me a tape. He used to have a tape of just teases. He's just like, yeah. I go meet with him every once in a blue moon. He say, yeah, your monologues are great, but your tease game is trash.
Your tease game is trash.
Your tease game. He's like, listen to Jonathan. Listen.
He didn't say that. He said, listen to Jonathan.
He said Jonathan and Ken Carmen have the best teases in the game. He said it. I said, I get it.
And I could tell when we went to break, you were impressed with the tease I gave.
Because I was like, hold on, I'm intrigued. Did I think about the same thing?
But then the problem is you have to pay off the tease. So now we're getting too radio in the weeds. But every second I don't pay off the tease. So as you're doing that Bernie Kosar story, I'm like, this is great. I'm enjoying this a ton. But dinner's getting cold. And I'm feeling like a liar. Every second I don't pay off the tease, I'm lying to the audience. Because I said, in 5 minutes, I'll pay this off.
Let's get
it. Now I need to pay this off. But you're the perfect person to run this. Okay, because you're asked, like, what's the connection between Classe and Ortiz, and is there any connection at all? And the only thing I can think of, so I learned this when I worked in restaurants, okay? I worked in restaurants in college, worked on a little boat that went off on Navy Pier, and it was fine dining, but it was a restaurant, right? And then the one thing I learned on there, and what I was taught by all the managers is, anytime you had anybody stealing from you, why are they stealing from you? Typically, in the workplace, it's because they feel like they're underpaid. They feel like they're not being compensated well enough, and they feel like they're underpaid. So it shouldn't be a surprise to people that the guardians of all teams are the ones that get caught in the crosshairs here when they have more people that feel like they're underpaid than anyone else. Ortiz, massively underpaid to be one of the best starting pitchers on that rotation, like he was for the first little stretch. Now, that's a baseball problem with Ortiz than it is anything else. But when it comes to Class A, that was a five-year $25 million deal that the Guardians told Class A, we think as highly of Miles Straw as we do you. Because they signed the same deal, 5 years, $25 million. And I think Class A is looking around. And he's like, wait, Hader with the Astros makes $19 million. Edwin Diaz with the Mets makes $20 million a year. Some of baseball's best closers make four times as much as I do. I'm going to try to get a little bit more bread. People that steal because they feel like they're not compensated.
Grade A plus, round of applause, because here's how I judge all of people's content. Did G. Bush think of that? If it was in the realm of possibility in my head, you are you are 1,000% correct. I just couldn't come up with the way I wanted to say it, and you said it perfectly. It's just not those two. Look at Kwan.
Kwan, is okay, that's a good point. You bring in Kwan. Now, Kwan doesn't have the way to manipulate it the same way that the pitchers do. So that's why that's going to be hard. But yes, like Kwan falls under that same category, people. Drastically underpaid. He's been pretty vocal, all things considered, with Instagram posts about he's been underpaid. And like it doesn't surprise me that the Guardians of all teams, the team that underpays everyone more than any other team in baseball, is the one that gets caught here.
This is facts. Now you look at it and you say, well, he's your all-star player. And I was telling, you know, I was sitting there talking to all the baseball guys around town. I said, how do you guys sell this, right? Because you're telling me, if you get drafted by the Guardians, you know they're going to exhaust every avenue to keep you in the minors, to stop that clock.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you turn out to be too good, like Francisco Lindor, you're never getting the bag.
Or you're getting the bag elsewhere. Yeah.
So you're always propositioning and auditioning for the other team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the way, Jose Ramirez, your best player, grossly underpaid.
Grossly underpaid, yeah. And again, it's one of those deals where I look at it and it's like, this is why people make these type of decisions. As dumb of a decision as it is, we can all agree it's a dumb decision. And yes, you're not thinking long term at all. You're a Major League Baseball player and you're throwing away potentially millions of dollars to win a $10,000 bet. But if you feel like you're not compensated well enough and you feel like you're underpaid, this might be a way of going about doing it, especially when other people on your team are already successful in pulling it off and it feels like they're never going to catch you.
Easy money.
They missed in the idea that there aren't that many of these bets that are made, but I understood how they got there. Coach Riz will join us next. He'll break down the latest with the MJ Emerson injuries. He was right there. And he'll also recap what happened with the quarterbacks as we continue on with training camp. It's Garrett Bush, Jonathan Peterlin, Afternoon Drive right here on the Fan.